Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham flick, and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of Wheeler Dealer Radio, the internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. We have another thrilling match to talk to you about today that I'm sure all of us are really excited to talk about. So let's jump right into it. Leading us off, we have our sidekick, who should be bringing up the rear, but I figured I'd start with him anyway. It's Ben Daniels. Ben, how pumped are you to talk about the Burnley match?
I'm pretty excited, you know. Here in Atlanta, we've got Dragon Con this weekend, so nothing can bring me down. It's like nerd Christmas coming.
Pretty sure the image of you in your costume in the mirror is going to do that, but, you know.
I'll have you know, my Misty from Pokemon costume is on point this year, so.
I mean, she's been written off the show for a while, so God knows how far she's fallen. That could work. But you're going to have to send us all a picture, or better yet, don't. Next up, we have, coming to us straight from the double pivot, we have Michael Cayley. Michael, are you ready for the Patreon After Dark edition of the double pivot that is this podcast?
Exactly. I appreciate all of our Patreon funders for funding us with not money. And I'm glad you're here for a podcast that I have already been drinking through a podcast for.
It's great. And guys, I just think you should all know that, you know, if you want to support do-it-yourself artists, then I'm going to talk for the next 5 minutes why you should fund us on Patreon. And it's not going to be tiring at all. And then halfway through, we're going to do an ad for a mattress company, because that's apparently what you want to do during a podcast about Spurs. Speaking of which, got our first solicitation for an ad this week directly to my email, which I thought was pretty funny.
From who?
From a mattress company?
It was from no one in particular. If it was the mattress people, I definitely would have taken it up on it.
I mean, come on.
What do you mean no one in particular?
We would have taken it up on anybody.
It was just someone looking to like purchase ad time on podcast. It was like he did not specify what he was trying to purchase ad time for.
Was this like a Nigerian prince offering to sponsor our podcast if we just loan him $1 million up front?
What was his name? His name is Aaron Trippier. Something about promoting his son, you know.
It's weird.
I don't know. Apparently, it's you had to
translate the original email from French, and then you had
exactly. I should translate it into Chinese and then back into English. Apparently, it wants to promote other podcasts, which, as anyone who listens to this podcast knows, we never do on this podcast. So, yeah. Okay, that was a really good aside, guys. Finally, we have just waiting his turn. We have Brian. Brian, I mean, what would you like to sell ads for on this podcast?
I mean, you know, I'm really open to anything, to be quite honest. I mean, we could do Blue Apron. We can do MeUndies. We could do whatever that website is that advocates that men cheat on their spouses. You know, we can do lots of stings. I'm open to everything.
do a sting on Ashley Madison. That'll be...
Yeah. That's the one. I knew somebody would know.
Do you want to do Kaylee would know, but I knew somebody would know
what I was talking about.
Do you want to do do you want to make the point of Wheeler Dealer Radio to sort of like uncover men who are being unfaithful to their wives? Is that how you want to pivot after the game against Burnley?
I mean, if we don't have to talk about Burnley, I'm open to any kind of pivot. Double pivot, single pivot, whatever.
Pivot to video.
I am always here for an Alan Pardew focused podcast.
I would love to talk about how Alan Pardew is defiling marriages in the sight of God and the Queen on a daily basis in the city of London. I would presume the city of London. I don't know where Alan probably gets around in all senses.
But definitely literally in the sight of the Queen.
I mean, he has probably defiled her marriage in particular.
Whoa. Too far, Greg.
Yeah, come on, Greg.
We respect the Queen on this podcast. I forgot.
We're all staunch monarchists here, Greg, and We're pretty offended
that
you.
The one line you don't cross.
That's a good point. You don't hear. I don't hear Chapo talking about how we need to eliminate the aristocracy in the House of Lords. So I think we found the one line that, that podcasts and Twitter won't cross. I think we've, we're trying really hard not
to talk
about this game.
Here's England's new national anthem, God Save the Queen from Alan Pardew.
I think that is a losing cause. Alan's going to get what Alan's going to get. And all we can do is hope to delay it. So, much like we have delayed talking about this game. What a seamless transition. So, Spurs drew 1-1 at... because we are Spurs fans on the internet, we'll say in air quotes, home at Wembley against Burnley. And boy, did that match suck. Brian, let's start with you. I mean, how disappointing was this match for you?
I'm going to be honest, not really. Not really much at all. I mean, it really kind of felt inevitable.
Are you stealing Ben's bits that, like this early in the podcast?
Yeah, I don't know. I just, you know, like, I don't mean it in the sort of way that it was like, oh, well, it's the Wembley hoodoo or whatever, but it's just like the way the game progressed and where it took us so long to make some sort of breakthrough. And you just thought, ah, this isn't going to go the way for us, and then this is going to be really annoying. And then, you know, for me, I'm sitting there thinking about, oh, now we're going to have to talk about this on the podcast, and I'm going to have to talk about how Wembley is, like, it's not that bad, and we can totally do better. And then it just, like, Dele Alli scores, and you get a brief ray of hope, and then, like, I don't know.
Well, we almost score a couple times after that. I mean, we were playing pretty well for, like, what, 70 minutes? And then the wheels fall off.
Yeah, I mean, the thing was, is just, like, look, so, like, you watch, like, Manchester United this year, and, you know, they'll struggle for a breakthrough against, you know, teams that they are obviously better than, and then all of a sudden, you know, they go and they slam four past them. And, you know, like, look, I get it, Burnley's very good defensively, they're set up very well, they played us really, really effectively, they defended well, everybody on their team played a good game. They all did their jobs. But we were so much better than them, and we should have won that game. And it shouldn't have even been close enough for them to get a last-minute equalizer.
I gotta say, I was really surprised after the match. Like, I thought we played better than Burnley, obviously, but I saw your XG chart, Michael, and that was a lot more in Spurs' favor than I was expecting after watching that match. I mean, is it letting Spurs off the hook to say they just sort of had a bad day at the office and were a little bit unlucky?
I mean, I think it's fair to some degree. Like, the chances that Kane had, especially he's got a one-on-one with the keeper off of an error by their fullback. You know, that's a goal you expect Kane to score. You had Kane you know, getting a shot blocked by a defender at the edge of the 6-yard box. You had Christian Eriksen unable to control a ball that wasn't quite where he wanted it, but was, you know, he was free in space in the center of the box. Like, we had a bunch of chances in the 18-yard box that we didn't convert, and we also once again took a lot of shots from outside the box and none of them got in, which isn't that weird. But like, you'd expect, you know, over a couple of weeks, you'd expect us to have scored a goal or two from outside the box, given how many shots we've taken. So I thought we were pretty good. Like, there are problems, and you can pinpoint those problems on particular players. But in this game, I think that we basically controlled the match. We definitely should have had two goals before the time that they broke on, before the, like, last 10 minutes, 5-10 minutes, when they broke on us and made us look bad. I thought we were pretty good.
Well, I think here's the thing worth remembering.
The Burnley is bad. We maybe could hope to be better than this against Burnley, but it's hard for me to see how there weren't two goals in our attack from what we did.
Well, and even if there weren't, I think the thing that's worth remembering is if we have a right back who does his fucking job, it doesn't matter that we only scored one goal. Their best chance, I mean, Hugo had a nice stop a little bit before that, but Hugo was all over that. I mean, their best chance, the only really good chance they had of the match was because Trippier completely switched off. And this isn't, like, I know we like, dump on Trippier a lot on this podcast, and this is a chicken that I am not eager to keep fucking. I am sick of talking about Kieran Trippier. I'm as sick of talking about it as you are of listening to it, listeners. But, like, this is not one of those things where we're like, why isn't Trippier further up the pitch? Because, you know, he can't do what Kyle Walker can do physically, and we're yelling at him about that. No, this was well within his physical abilities to handle. Like, he should be able to spot that, track it, and stop it. Like, that he didn't is a failure on every conceivable level. And I think it speaks, I was saying this before the game, like, a lot of times in your career, you know, when you don't realize what an important day a certain day is going to be for you in terms of your overall career. Like, Kieran Trippier, with all the rumors about Aurier and Pereira earlier in the summer, and just Spurs looking for another right back, he knew exactly how important this game was. It was his last chance to leave a positive impression on the team before an international break. And he probably, I don't know if the worst game he possibly could have had, but it was really friggin' bad. I mean, Ben, you always have a lot to say about Trippier. I mean, how bad was his fuck-up at the end of the match?
Yeah, I mean, it was inexcusable. I don't know what else to say. The thing about Kieran Trippier is everybody who thinks he's good, and even people who think he's an adequate backup, would point to this match and say, Burnley is the kind of game Kieran Trippier is perfectly suited for.
Yes.
This is where we can feel safe running out Kieran Trippier because they're not going to get that many chances, and he's such an asset in the attack, and he'll put in all these wonderful crosses, and, you know, he'll get so many assists, and we'll score so many goals that even if he might be a little bit defensively suspect, you know, it's not going to matter because it's a bad team, and he'll help us win those games. And I thought, you know, this game was the complete counter-narrative to that. He did nothing in attack. He was completely useless. And at the moment it counted on defense, he was nowhere to be found. You know, to me, this says not only is he equipped to being our starting right back, but I don't know that we can trust him as our backup right back because these are the kinds of games we need Kieran Trippier to play in if he's going to be our backup. You know, rest him for a Burnley match when we have Champions League the next Wednesday. And, you know, he botched it completely. And I don't think for anybody who's been, you know, listening to the Wheeler Dealer Kieran Trippier Sucks show for the past several months is surprised. But, I mean, it's just, there's no excuse for it. There's no excuse for him playing that badly. There's no excuse for us relying on him when we have seen him be this bad a lot. Like, yes, this is the first time we've been really punished for it, but you had to know it was coming.
This is the first time it's been this obvious. Like, yes,
right. Like, he was bad against Chelsea. He was bad against Chelsea in the FA Cup semifinal last year. I mean, he's bad against good teams. This is the first time where his badness has really cost us against a bad team.
And I think it's interesting, Ben, because, like you said, it hasn't really cost us yet this year. And I look at sort of the lack of flank play, which Davies is just as guilty of as Trippier, but I don't think Davies is prone to these kind of mistakes as Trippier is. But the lack of that against Burnley, the lack of that against Chelsea, Newcastle, to some extent, is it didn't really punish us in the way that it did in this game, where it was just more about, I thought, missed opportunities. Like, our attack's a little more one-dimensional than it ought to be because we're not really getting the width that we would like to see, but, you know, it's not like they're not getting rinsed up and down the sideline like, you know, we were kind of scared of. And in this match, you know, I mean, at the crucial moment, he just gets completely worked by, you know, championship level players. And it's just inexcusable on any conceivable level.
Well, I mean, I guess in defense of Kieran Trippier, I guess, putting aside the first 80 minutes of the game where he was very bad, those last 5-10 minutes where Spurs are kind of getting put on the back foot by Burnley, we were kind of playing like we had Davinson Sanchez, who's making his debut in midfield, a position that I don't think he played at all for Ajax, and I'm not sure if he played at all before moving to IX. And so we had him, and I think at that time it was Winks in midfield. And then we were playing a back three with Dyer, Vertonghen, and Alderweireld. And so, you know, I'm not sure if the midfield that normally would have, if you had Wanyama in there, would have closed down on the flanks a little bit to help with Trippier getting caught upfield, was doing an as effective of a job, because we were playing with not the first choice guys that we want out there, with new players who maybe didn't understand the system. And so maybe that was also partially an issue I don't like Trippier any more than anybody else does, but I'm just trying to like make excuses for him. Like maybe, you know, like maybe Pochettino's dumb substitutions and putting Sanchez in at midfield instead of putting him in at center back and shifting Toby to right back, or putting Sanchez in at right back and pulling off like maybe that's what the problem, that was a contributing factor to the problem.
I mean, I think what you say is true, and also is not an excuse for Kieran Trippier. I mean, I think that tells us, you know, we know we have problems with our squad depth, you know, guys like Sissoko, who actually had a decent game, and, you know, Sanchez in his debut, and, you know, Harry Winks, as promising as he may be, you know, our squad just isn't really that good. And so maybe in a world where we have 10 first-choice players, we can carry Kieran Trippier and not really suffer for it. But, you know, as soon as our team is a little weakened by substitutions because we don't have a deep bench, or injuries, because that's going to happen over the course of the season, you know, all of his liabilities become really, really apparent when you don't have Moussa Dembele and Victor Wanyama, you know, stopping everything from even getting to the back line. And that's a situation we're going to face a lot this year. And if Kieran Trippier is playing 30 games a season, you know, he's going to get found out again. So, yes, I agree. It's not entirely on him that happened. You know, we took off, you know, Christian Eriksen and Heung-Min Son and a lot of our you know, good attacking players to put on guys who aren't as good. And, you know, we surrendered the initiative, and that put pressure on Kieran Trippier. And, you know, he was dealing it alongside players he was unfamiliar with playing with, players who were unfamiliar with the system, and players who just aren't that good. And, yeah, that's going to happen, and it's going to be a problem.
And it makes it worse, but that, in a weird way, that makes it worse on Trippier for me, because, like, he knows he's got to step up. This isn't, like, something that, like, the game was sort of, like, meandering along to a conclusion, and all of a sudden Burnley popped up with a random goal. Like, we were under pressure for at least 5-10 minutes before that happened. I mean, that guy, especially if that midfield is like kind of pieced together and not exactly what you'd want to see out there from us, like, I mean, you know, time for him to play heads up football. Like, I mean, there's no excuse for what happened. It's,
I mean, look, the Sanchez sub specifically to me is a very weird one.
He's just trying to clog the midfield. I mean,
yeah, but I mean, I know you don't have Wanyama available, so you can't bring on, you know, kind of the active closing down midfielder that you want. But like, to take Sanchez, who, like I said, I don't think played midfield at all at Ajax.
I think he had a cup of coffee there, but yeah, I mean, essentially,
and
you're right.
To shove him into defensive midfield in his first game, when you still have Dyer on the pitch, who could have easily shifted into defensive midfield, where you still have there were so many other things he could have done with Sanchez there, and it felt like Poch did it just to get a guy on the pitch for his debut, without any actual consideration for what was actually going on the field and what needed to be done and how it should be best handled. Like, it seemed like a poor sort of game management substitution decision from Pochettino.
I mean, just given how short our bench was, it doesn't... I can see what he was trying to do, and...
Right, but again, like Brian said, not putting Dyer into midfield and letting Sanchez play center back where he plays, like... Even if you want to get him on the pitch, that's inexcusable. Like, we know Dyer is a very good defensive midfielder. why would you not? Like, why would you not? What would possibly possess you to do anything other than move Dyer to midfield and play Sanchez at center back if you wanted to get him on the pitch? Like, it just makes zero sense.
And all we did for that 4 minutes was just kick the ball long. Like, if you're just going to kick the ball long, like, put Thick Van on the field.
Which he didn't.
You know, get someone who can receive the ball and do something with it. If all you're going to do is bypass midfield, I don't know why you'd make a midfield sub.
I miss Thick Van doing his post-up, sticking his ass out.
That's what getting
we need.
Fouled.
That's what we need, Poach. Exactly. But that's exactly what we need.
Like, yeah. No, going back to Trippier one more time, I guess, before we leave. I'm sorry. If you're going to look at Trippier and say that, like, so whatever he did was very, like, bad, and his own personal culpability is, you know, chief amongst everything, like, more so than the tactics. And Pochettino is, he got burned by that same ball like twice before the actual equalizer. Like, I think it was probably like 60 seconds before that he got burned on that ball over the top, and we just got lucky because they overhit it. And I think there was another one sometime before that where the striker was offside on the run. And, you know, like, you can't make that mistake that many times in a row. Like, as a player, you have to be like, oh, hey, they're probably trying to hit that ball. I should maybe hang back a little bit. Like, and it's not like he was doing anything in the attack at that time. Like,
at any time. But yeah, Chris Wood got called offside like three times after he came on. It was like they were clearly going for long balls to him over the top. Like, that was their only move, and we weren't ready for it.
Which is, you know, weird to try and, you know, hit somebody built like Kevin Vimmer on balls over the top. Like, you would think that you were going to play him to his head and let him knock him down to somebody. But it was an odd strategy, but it worked, so what the fuck do I know?
Well, we've certainly beaten this particular horse to death. I mean, I'm not sure how much of the rest of the match we really feel like talking about. I thought Dele Alli had a nice goal. I think our attack through the center is a little one-dimensional right now, but it's working more or less. One thing we've been talking a lot about in our writers' room this week that I'm interested to bring on to the podcast is our conversation about the value of blocked shots. Ben, you've sort of driven this train, for lack of a better term. I mean, you've sort of been talking a lot about how, especially this season, it seems like Spurs are getting a lot of shots blocked, and you're having trouble telling if that means our attack's good and we're being a little unlucky, or if we're taking bad shots, right?
Yeah, so I was kind of questioning Michael's expected goals maps from the last couple of games. That I felt overvalued our performance or overrated our performance. Against Chelsea, we had a bunch of blocked shots, and against Burnley, again, we had a bunch of blocked shots, both in and out of the box. And so to me, you know, it says expected goals is only a rough approximation about, you know, the quality of the chance. And one of the things that's missing is defensive positioning. And, you know, when we see, you know, 10 blocked shots a game, to me it says, well, the defensive positioning was probably better than average for a shot in that position. And that, you know, the chances maybe weren't as good as they seemed because, you know, they're getting charged down so often. And so I'm just kind of wondering, you know, were the chances we were creating really that good, or were we just creating chances in dangerous areas and, you know, the teams we were playing against, both Chelsea and Burnley, defended deeply and were prepared to cover those shots. So, Michael, I don't know if you have feelings about this.
Yeah. I mean, against Chelsea, we had 0.6 XG. I feel totally fine about that. That seems right. So I don't really have a problem with our XG against Chelsea or Newcastle, which was 2.2, and we scored two. I think that was basically on point. I think that there's certainly a case that we had a couple chances in the box that were blocked against Burnley. I think that for the most part, what's going on with our shots outside the box is shots outside the box are pretty likely to get blocked, and shots outside the box are like, you know, 0.04 XG most of the time at best, maybe getting up to 0.06 in the very best situations. Very rarely that much above that. I feel pretty good right now with saying that our attack is fine. I think it's been fine so far. I think that we got stopped by Chelsea, who are very good defensively, and there are problems to solve there. But against the bad teams, I don't see a lot of reason to worry that the attackers we've got right now are not good enough to break down teams like Burnley and Newcastle. I think that I for the most part, our attacking problems, where we don't get the kind of width we need from our fullbacks, are going to hurt us against worse team against better teams.
I guess I would say, I don't feel like our attackers are the problem, like they're not good enough. It's just that the tactics, or, you know, maybe because of the fullbacks, the way we're creating opportunities are one-dimensional and predictable enough that it's easy to, you know, put defenders in positions to make those blocks on the chances we're creating, because we're not creating particularly inventive or, you know, dangerous opportunities. We're just sort of shooting into a packed wall of players. I mean, any evidence for that against Burnley?
I mean, I think that was very true in the Chelsea game, but the Chelsea game, our XG was only 0.6. I think that, like, there's a case that then the Burnley game, it's a little bit too prevalent to us, but, like, you know, Dele scoring off those two chances and Kane not scoring off of his breakaway and another chance or two in the box, you know. I mean, I think one of the weird things about Spurs' attack is that we do a relatively bad job compared to the other top teams. If you look at the number of times that teams get passes into the complete passes or complete runs past a defender into the 18-yard box. No, City does it all the time. Liverpool do it at reasonable rates. United this year have been doing it at very high rates. We do it less. And our attack doesn't break through the opposition lines as often as other teams do, and yet we end up putting up pretty good expected goals every year. And I'm a little confused by it. I want to think about it more. I want to understand it. But so far this season, we've still been putting up pretty good expected goals while not getting quite as much attacking, passing or running at penetration into the 18-yard box. Something I don't – seems peculiar to Pochettino's teams. I don't have a clear handle on it.
Well,
yeah. I mean, it may be like a results bias where because it was blocked, the shot felt worse. But, you know, watching the game, I wasn't like, oh, we should have scored a lot more goals. That's my unscientific feeling.
I mean, certainly my unscientific feeling was like the quality of shots that were getting blocked seemed to get better as the game was going on. But certainly early on, it felt more like we were just taking pot shots from range.
Yeah, our XG was pretty much all in the second half.
Yeah. So, thank you for confirming that once again I am right and Ben is wrong. Moving on. Moving on, unless anyone has anything else they want to get through in this dreadful match, I think it's time to talk about the Champions League, which we can get sort of excited about until the realities of our roster come crushing down on us in about 4 days when the transfer market happens. Spurs have drawn in the Champions League Real Madrid, Borussia Dortmund, and Apoel out of a Cypriot team, which is very Europa League of us. But after a year in which our draw felt like a very much a Europa League draw, I mean, whatever else you want to say about this year, that feels like a Champions League group. I mean, Brian, what are your first thoughts on this? I'm guessing we all had the same, which is Spurs are going to finish third at best. But, you know, I mean, what other thoughts did you have upon seeing this group?
I mean, my first thought after seeing Real Madrid and Borussia Dortmund drawn together was like, well, there's our group. I will admit, my first thought was that we would get drawn into the group with Atletico and PSG. That was the one I thought we'd get in. But yeah, no, I mean, this is what I said last year. These are the teams that I want to play at, you know, Wembley. That you know, if we're gonna be in the Champions League, that these are the teams that I want to play. Like, I don't want to have to play Spartak Moscow and Braga and or Benfica or whoever it is. I want to play Real Madrid. I want to play Borussia Dortmund. Apoel's fine, whatever. You know, like, these are the games we want. And, you know, look, it's going to be, you know, 90,000 people at Wembley Stadium to watch Real Madrid against Spurs, and it's going to be awesome. And, you know, if you can't get excited about that, even if, you know, the prospect of the group is probably us finishing third or contending with Dortmund for second, whatever, however optimistic or pessimistic you want to be about it, it's still going to be fun. Like, this is why you want to play in the Champions League. It's because it's going to be awesome.
It is very cool. Like, I mean, once you, if you just put your self-preservation instincts aside, it is very cool that we are playing real teams that have real European pedigrees in Europe. And that is really cool. And, you know, it might have been nice if we got Real Madrid or Dortmund and, you know, some Italian team that isn't as good as everyone thinks they are, because that really worked out well for us the last time we played this game. But it's still really cool. Michael, what is the...
Hold on, I want to disagree with both of you.
You want to... But Ben, you were, like, making this argument last year.
Yeah, and now I'm feeling differently.
Oh, so, my God.
Like, this attitude of, like, yay, we get to play Real Madrid feels like such a... I hate to say it, such a small club mentality. And, like, yes, we are a small club, and maybe that's fair.
It's still a novelty, like, for us. When we're in the Champions League for 14 years in a row, like, we can, like, maybe be a little more practical about it. But this is still novel.
Yeah, but, you know, it's like people want to be in the Champions League because they want to win the Champions League, not so they can, like, make up the numbers and say, hooray, we got our asses kicked by Real Madrid. Wasn't that exciting that we were lucky enough to get to play Real Madrid? Like, I don't know. That to me feels a little horseshit. Like, I'm fine with the draw. It is what it is. The Champions League's hard. You're going to play hard teams. But, you know, you don't see Manchester United fans or Chelsea fans, like, getting excited that they get a glamour tie against Barcelona. Like, they're like, we want an easy draw so we can advance, and then we'll play the tough teams as they come.
Because hopefully those teams have, like, decades of history in the Champions League,
yeah,
Ben.
I know. I understand. But at the same time, it's like, you know, why are, like, who gives a shit about finishing third in our group, going
to
the Europa League.
I can't get over
that nonsense again.
I can't, like, get over the year-to-year hypocrisy from Ben Daniels.
It's not hypocrisy.
It's hypocrisy.
No, it's a shifting sensibility based on,
oh my God,
evidence. So last year, yeah, we were
based on what evidence? What evidence are you basing this on?
Last year, when we got fucking stomped by like mediocre teams, and then ended up falling out into the Europa League, where we also lost.
So you
had to
want
to
do that again? Is that what you're saying? That's what you want to do again? You want to be in the Benfica, Basel, CSKA Moscow group that United are in, and you want to finish third and go to the Europa League. That's what you're saying.
I don't want to finish third at all. I want a group where we get, yeah, one exciting team that we get to play against and, like, be excited about, and then some other games that we can win, and then we win, and then we finish, you know, first or second in our group, and then we go play the knockouts. That's where shit gets really fun. I mean, our first time in the Champions League, it was like Inter, FC20, and Werder Bremen. Like, okay, we had the reigning European champions and two scrub teams, and, like, that was fun. We were still in the Champions League. We got out of our group. We beat AC Milan. That was awesome. Like, that was where shit got fun. Last year, losing in the group stages was not fun. Like, yes, losing in the group stages to better teams might be more fun than losing in the group stages to shitty teams.
I mean, we lost still, the, like, better teams why... last year. We just didn't realize it. Or at least we lost the one better team last year. We just didn't realize they were a better team at the time.
I remember Houston were a fucking trash.
No, I'm talking about Monaco.
Yeah, Monaco turned out that they're very good. They won their league. You know, whatever. I'm just saying, like, going to the Champions League and being excited about getting our asses kicked by Real Madrid.
I don't want to get our asses kicked.
It's not that exciting. Like, I'd like to win.
I don't think it's a given that we're going to lose this group, because I think in a weird way, I mean, I think it's going to be a lot of work, and that is what I was going to go on to talk to Kaylee about, if you give me the time, Ben. What I'm interested in is what... Shut up, Ben. What is the realistic... Kaylee,
What is the realistic path for Spurs out of this group?
So, the 538 predictions give Spurs a little under 50% chance of getting out of this group. So it's not like we're out. We're not out of it. I mean, there's a lot of different things that can happen. Most of those things involve Dortmund dropping points when we don't drop points. Say that we manage to snag a draw against Real Madrid and they don't. Say that they manage to drop points against who's our crappy team?
Apoel.
Apoel. Say they drop points in Cyprus and we don't. Like there's a bunch of different things. There's a bunch of perfectly reasonable single game outcomes that can give us a leg up. Say that we manage to get points away to Dortmund. Like that's not totally unreasonable. Say that there's a lot of ways that we can get a leg up on Dortmund in this group. This is not a unbeatable group. It's just the hardest group we could have drawn. But Spurs are good enough that even drawing the hardest group we should have drawn were 50-50 shots to get out of it. So I hope we do.
I mean, and I think there's probably an argument to be made, which could end up being proven wrong. This might be one of the more vulnerable Dortmund teams we've had since Klopp had his weird sort of off year a few years ago, which I still haven't had explained to me adequately. So, you know, I mean,
it was mostly just bad shooting.
Yeah, exactly. So who knows? You know, I mean, I think that is not a crazy world in which we get out of this podcast. Ben, how are we not going to advance out of this group?
I mean, you know, there's a 50-50 chance we're better than Dortmund. That's what Michael says, and that's basically what it comes down to. And, like, it's a coin toss, and, you know, maybe it'll work out for us, maybe it won't. I'm just saying, if we got into a group with Real Madrid, us, and two worse teams, that's better. We get to play an exciting tie, and then we get out, and then it's fine. But in 6 months, if we find ourselves in the Europa League, we're not going to be like, Remember that glory night where we lost to Dortmund at Wembley? Like, that's not going to be a memory anyone cherishes. Yeah. So I don't know why we're getting excited about
it. But the thing is like,
it was the worst possible draw we could get. That Ben's right. It was the worst possible draw we could get. That's what it was.
Getting a worse team than Dortmund after getting drawn with Real Madrid, like, your options were Porto and PSG. Like, those are the only two other options that we had. We couldn't get Sevilla, we couldn't get any of the English teams, we couldn't get Atletico. So it was PSG or Porto. And Porto's obviously the weaker of those two of those options, but, you know, I'd rather play Dortmund than PSG. So
yeah, but now you're just saying between hard teams. There are other groups.
Sure. I understand, but I mean if I'm going to be in a group with Real Madrid, then you know, I don't know. I'm happy with this draw. I'm excited for it. If we finish third, I don't even care. Because we'll finish third behind the best team in Europe for the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. And Dortmund, I guess.
I mean, none of it's going to matter unless we get more depth on this team. Because we're going to miss Dele Alli for the first three games, which is going to be very problematic for this team, I think. Even if it will enforce some rotation on us, that will probably help to some degree in the league. But
so, Greg, do you think that we're going to make any transfers?
What a great transition, Michael. You should be on three podcasts in one night. I have no earthly idea. I think, much like beating Borussia Dortmund in our group, it is a 50-50 coin flip. I think Daniel Levy is perfectly capable of pulling a lot of good transfers off. I think we are also leaving it very late. So if this shit doesn't work out, we're going to be left holding the bag. And it, you know, there's a lot riding on the next, like, 3 or 4 days here. And it's not, it could really go either way.
The concern is,
can I just say something here? Like we talk about the fullback situation and we need a right back, and we've made the case from a variety of angles that, like, signing a right back who has a history of, like, you know, causing real pain, doing real damage to certain sets of Spurs fans, LGBT fans, that's bad. We don't want that. That would need to be managed, all of that. And, like, that's all important. why aren't we signing an attacking midfielder?
Because we're going our after Ross Barkley. We're going after Ross Barkley.
But he's injured until at least December.
Eric Lamella is going to be like a new signing. Eric Lamella is going to be like a new signing.
We're not signing anyone to fill really important roles on this team, and I don't understand it at all. How did Keita Balde get signed by Monaco for 25 million euros plus 5 million in add-ons when he would have been a perfectly good player for our team? I don't get it at all.
Michael, I don't know if you know, but Monaco are waiting for us to bid on Thomas Lamar, so clearly... It's going to be fine.
The price is apparently now what, 70 million pounds, I think, from Liverpool?
Euros. Yeah, I think
Levy is absolutely going to spend 70 million pounds on Lamar. I think that's totally right in his wheelhouse. Yeah, sure.
It's what drives me up the wall is, like, I am perfectly willing to accept that, like, there is a reason that Balde is not at Spurs. He doesn't want to come to England. Monaco laid some groundwork with him. He just didn't like how we set up for him. I don't know. I'm willing to accept there is a rational explanation for why he's not on Spurs. Why we don't have plans B, C, D, and E lined up to go if this attacking midfield option that we seem to like doesn't want to come here is something I have no understanding of. I don't understand. And maybe there's going to be another, like, Hunming Sun signing that we see that comes out of nowhere, or a Rafa van der Vaart where we just, like, snatch an opportunity at the last minute. But Rafa van der Vaart, guys like that, that's not what we should be doing when we're in such a precarious situation.
I'm praying that we're just sitting on, you know, deadline day and waiting to see who the odd man out in PSG's attacking midfield is. Like, if they finish Mbappe, which maybe they have, I don't know. But assuming PSG gets Mbappe and they've already, you know, sign Neymar, so somebody, you know, whether that's Julian Draxler or Lucas Moura or, you know, somebody in PSG's attacking midfield is going to be the odd man out. There's not enough games to go around there. So I wouldn't mind Julian Draxler. I wouldn't mind Lucas Moura. Maybe that's our plan.
I mean, Draxler's the only guy I can sort of see coming here. Maybe that's just, I'm just saying that because he's the only guy who's been tied in with us, but, like, I mean, that's a lot of wages.
I just don't know how you're imputing a plan on anything that's happening in this transfer window.
No, there's no plan. Like, I'm just trying, you know, I'm trying to think of this in terms of the way that I play Football Manager. And I always have a plan, Ben, and I just, we don't have anything.
Plan, is, as much as there is one, is clearly wait till the end where a lot of other teams have gotten their business done and, like, get guys in when other teams have stopped sniffing around. I don't think it's working terribly well. But
I mean, Pochettino's talking about, you know, three more signings. Who are these three guys? Is it Foyth, Aurier, and who? Is it Barkley? Because if it's Barkley, I'm going to be pissed.
Probably. Chelsea seems to be trying Barkley's to save us from ourselves, but...
I hate transfers now. I used to love transfers. I used to love transfer rumors. I hate them now.
That's because when we were bad, transfer rumors represented, like, just I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but, like, just untapped potential of, you know, anything could happen, and
just hope.
It couldn't be worse. Like, there's just so much hope there. Whereas now when we're good, you know, it's so much easier to get it wrong. Like, if we signed a Moussa Sissoko 6 years ago, it's like, well, fuck, maybe Moussa Sissoko is going to be good. And if he's bad, well, we're probably no worse off than we are. Now that we're like, okay, we finished second, we're trying to compete in the Champions League, we're trying to get top four again, you know, God forbid, we might even try to win a title, you know, we know that the transfers have to be spot on, that we have to be operating with, like, a real framework, with a real plan, and, you know, you can't just sort of wish cast that Juan Foyth is going to come out and, like, somehow solve our attacking midfield problems in a way that, like, you could have convinced yourself 5 years ago. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I think the other thing that's disconcerting for me is, like you said, before there were just, like, rumors, like, just unfounded rumors that were just rampant, linking with every player in every European league. And if an agent wanted to drive the price up with their client, they got linked with Spurs. And it doesn't happen anymore. Like, that's the thing that's concerning to me, is that, you know, we're coming into deadline day. We're a couple days away from it at this point, and like, there's nothing. It's Aurier, Foyth, and Barkley, and that's pretty much it. There's not even paper talk of other stuff. Like, it's really, really weird.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is, it's like, I don't know, like, we're not just a stalking horse to drive people's prices up anymore because we're good.
We are.
But at the same time, yeah, we are. And, like, you know, people know we'll sign trash if you make it available to us. You know, Moussa Sissoko Part 2 could still happen.
I mean, the other thing is, like, it seems like now, this late in the window, like, transfer fees are getting more reasonable. So when you see Kitibalda moving for, was it 25 plus 5 million in add-ons, you look at that and go, oh, well, we could have paid that. Like, so, you know, it's interesting because now there are guys going, you know, Jovetic going to Monaco for 11 million, or, you know, I don't know anything about the midfielder from Celta Vigo, the Papa
Chiquiao.
Like, I don't know anything about him, but he went for, you know, 10 million euro. Like, these are all prices that we could have been paying for these guys. We could have signed these players financially. Like, whether or not they were interested aside, like, this is not now, you know, Neymar money or Lukaku or Ousmane Dembele or whatever. This isn't absurd money. These are prices that are certainly within Spurs' wheelhouse. And
I mean, who knows? Nothing. With these lottery ticket guys, I mean, I feel like that's where you're getting into this level of, like, how much playing time are they guaranteed? What kind of conversation? It's hard to know. But it's when you get up to the level of, like, why aren't we targeting more guys like Baldy? That's where it drives me completely insane.
I think the flip side of that is, like, as Brian mentioned, you know, prices do seem to be, like, normalizing to a degree. And maybe that is, you know, Levy's plan. He didn't have a handle on the crazy prices flying around earlier in the transfer window, so he wanted to wait and see. And now that shit's coming back down to earth and there's, you know, a bunch of players who want to leave their clubs who, you know, haven't found new clubs yet, you know, prices might come down. And maybe that's just the moment he was waiting to, like, bang out a bunch of deals. I wouldn't put it past Levy that, you know, he's a good businessman. That's not an insane strategy. It's insane for, like, building a good football team, but it's not insane for, you know, getting value in a market that was overinflated by a lot of people spending stupid money.
Which is so fine.
And by the way, we just spent $40 million on a defender who we substituted on to play central midfield in his debut. So, you know, it's not like we don't have fucking money.
I don't know. I think that, like, waiting and trying to figure out what's going on is not unreasonable, but I think that previous to the Neymar deal, the money in this market was pretty normal. There was nothing the transfer fee for Lukaku was what you would have projected before the summer started. You know, the fees that were being demanded were right in the normal wheelhouse. It wasn't until PSG just sort of, like, extracted a bunch of oil from Qatar and put it into Barcelona's bank account that the fees got super weird. That, like, Lamar's fee went from 45 to 70 million or whatever, and
Coutinho became a 150 million.
And Coutinho became a 120 million pound player. All of those things happened after the Neymar transfer, and the market is still sort of responding to that. So I think that, like, if
I don't know,
waiting and waiting is not an unreasonable decision. Like, it, you know, trying to figure this out, wait, try to figure it out. Like, I get that, but I think it didn't work because this Neymar thing happened and the market went, like, crazy.
I think the market was crazy before Neymar. I mean, you had Kyle Walker and Benjamin Mendy going for a combined, what, 107 million?
But that's within the realm of, like, City paying the City premium. Like,
and, I mean, Gylfi Sigurdsson was a 50 million.
Okay, that makes, like, that's more of a rational take on that.
I mean, the Mendy and Walker deals felt like the kind of money I expect them to pay in this market. That felt predictable. The Gylfi deal is just weird. But I met Mendy and Walker. I think I could have predicted that money before, and I think Leffy could have too.
You would have predicted world record transfer fee for Kyle Walker.
Yes. To move Spurs rival for the title in the same country.
Would you have expected Spurs to sell him for 30?
I mean, yeah, I think 30 or 40 would have been 30 in or England? 35 would have been much more in line with my expectations. Yeah.
I think they're selling him to PSG and goes for 30, but not in England.
I think the thing is that the prices are all higher this summer, but they're still, for the most part, operating within, you know, relativity that makes sense. Like, yes, Lukaku for 80 million or whatever he was is very high for a striker compared to the past couple of years. But, you know, if we establish that as like the baseline for what transfers look like, all the other pieces that fall into place around it, Kyle Walker for 50 million, Benjamin Mendy for 50 million, like those all make sense in that context. And I think that is a realistic context for what the new TV money in the Premier League looks like. And the amount people are spending.
But even then, you have certain transfers get out of control. Like you look at Sigurdsson. I think that's a good example of where the market's getting a little weird beyond just the knock-on effects of Neymar.
That weird.
That 50 million for Sigurdsson's pretty weird.
It's a bad deal, but I don't think it's a weird deal. Like, again, imagine last year where the best striker who moves goes for 60 million and a guy like Sigurdsson goes for 30 million. Like, that. Again, it seems high, but you're like, okay, 30 million for a guy who has created a lot, scores a lot, you know, really good set piece taker. You know, that seems like a normal price that someone would pay for a guy like that. It's just that everything has been bumped up by, you know, a good 20 million pounds that it's now at 50 million, and that seems weirder. Like, I think it's going to be money poorly spent, but I don't think that's an unreasonable number for Gylfi Sigurdsson in a market like this for a team like Everton trying to make a splash. Again, it's bad. It's a bad transfer, but I don't think it's like the money. I don't think the money is insane.
Well, I mean, the market's very weird. I do grant. I think that waiting on the market is not the worst strategy in the world, and certainly makes a level of sense for a team with finances that are like Spurs' finances are, but. We don't have a longer list of targets is where I find the strategy to be confounding.
The thing about like what our finances are is I'm not really sure what our finances are. Like so like we've sold players for about 100 million, give or take, you know, including Walker, Wimmer, Bentaleb, NG, Fazio. So we've made some money in player sales and we've only outlaid for Sanchez. So there's still, you know, money from those transfers we spent. Like, how much money do you guys think we have left to spend in the next, 2 days?
I mean, I could see us spending anywhere up to 100 million pounds. Like, but I think it's probably more likely that we're going to spend 40 to 50.
I mean, I think, you know, you look at Foyth for 10, Aurier for 25, an attacking midfielder for like 30. That's probably the business we're trying to pull off. So let's call that 65 million.
And I can see a world where we strike out on one or two of those guys, or where I can also see a world where, you know, we hit a home run on somebody that we didn't think we could get and we end up spending a little more than we thought we were. So, I mean, wages are the other issue here. When you get a player like, let's say, Draxler, who we were talking about, like, I mean, even if he takes reduced wages, it's still going to be pretty high wages for us. And, you know, I'm sure that's a factor in whether or not we're going to get these guys. I don't know. Our transfer situation is so screwed up right now. I hope we get some people. I feel like we need depth or the season's going to kill us. Or we're just going to crash out early in the Champions League and do what we did last year. So
I mean, we're sitting on a profit of over 50 million pounds right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a crap ton of money.
I mean, we just spent 40 million on a guy who has 1 year of experience in Europe and like one year of senior experience in in South America.
Which is about exactly as much as we got from the Wimmer and Bentaleb deals.
Exactly. Exactly. So,
we got Sanchez for what we paid, what we got received in return for Wimmer and Bentaleb. So we haven't paid off the Walker deal or the other smaller moves with Clinton and Fazio. We have a lot of money to spend.
But what's interesting about the Sanchez deal is I know that like Sanchez is probably on pretty cheap wages, but like clearly we're not letting the price tag scare us off, because that's a lot of money for a guy with his level of qualifications.
Well, I mean, what's going on is we don't have. I mean, last year it was reported that we hired a scout. Like, there were stories about this. Tottenham Hotspur hires a scout. Like the problem here, the reason that all this is going down is that we don't have, like, a scouting and analytics department that can produce produce sort of, like, here's your five targets, here's your seven targets, give us these inputs, okay, here's the guys you need to look at. We're just not doing that. And that means that our transfers are going to be weird, and it's going to be hard for us to spend the money we need to spend.
So, the only thing that's really changed, other than Balde going in the transfer market since last week, is that Jansen has kind of moaned a little bit about his role on the team, and now it looks like we're in for Origi. I mean, how do we feel about...
Say that name again?
I'm not. The backup striker from Liverpool, whose name I absolutely didn't fuck up, and now I'm self-conscious about it.
Oh, Daniel Sturridge?
Yeah, him.
Danny Ings,
exactly. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Ben, how do you feel about getting Danny Ings?
Is that guy still alive?
No. I think Lallana assumed him into his haircut.
So Divock Origi is the guy we're linked with from Liverpool, who is not good.
And is a striker, not an attacking midfielder or a fullback.
Yeah, the only reason he would make sense is if, you know, Jansen's unhappy, we don't give a fuck about Jansen, and we're going to shift him and bring in Origi to be his backup, or his replacement as Kane's backup. Which would be a dumb move, but... You know, I can see it happening because we're dumb. Origi is not good. He is only 22, so he's still young, but he has never had a particularly good season ever. He played a couple years in France, and he scored like 6 goals a season. You know, he scored a few goals for the Belgium national team, and people got excited about that. And he scored off the bench for Liverpool. But, like, he has never put together remotely near a season as good as Jansen did in Holland. So, you know, if we're looking at upside, you know, I think he is a substantial downgrade to what we already have. So it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me.
I know that like a Liverpool fan living in Antarctica could talk himself into buying ice, but was it last year or the year before that Liverpool fans on Twitter at least seemed to be convinced that he was actually a good player?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember which year it was, but I remember them specifically comparing him to Harry Kane as, you know, you've got your young striker. Isn't that adorable? We have Divock Origi, who scored 6 goals in France. Liverpool fans are dumb as shit. And that's just the world we live in.
Ugh. So, yeah.
Unfortunately, they're signing good players, so... I think if Liverpool wants to sell you a player at this stage, like looking at how good their team has been this season and how good their signings have been, I would be incredibly skeptical of anybody they're trying to dump.
Other movement we've seen is Sissoko. It looks like he's not going anywhere. We've been playing footsie with Inter and, I guess, Turkey. Trabzonspor or someone like that. But I don't know about you guys, but reading the tea leaves, I don't think he's going anywhere before the deadline closes. Does anyone think he's gone come the first?
I mean, if he plays like he did against Burnley, I don't want him to go. But since we all know that that happens about once every 5 or 6 months.
He deserves that goal. He deserves.
We're gonna be stuck with him coming on in the 66th minute of every game, like he's the fucking Scott Parker Memorial Andre Villas-Boas defensive midfielder sub. I don't know what this is. I'm so tired of Sissoko.
Yeah, there was a thing, I guess today, where he was on like Facebook Live or Snapchat or something.
Was it Periscope? We have problems with players in Periscope, apparently.
But somebody, it might have been Periscope, somebody was like, you know, telling him to fuck off, and he was like, if you don't like it, that's your problem, I'm here to stay. And so fans rightfully freaked out because, you know, nobody wants that. And we're all hoping that in the next 3 days something good will happen, but y'all should know better.
We really should. The other big news that happened this week is Kevin Vimmer has finally left us. He was sold to Stoke because he didn't want to play left back for Tony Pulis at West Brom, which I don't know what the funniest part of that sentence is, but surely it's there. I think the question that we have to ask ourselves here is the question that Reno Wallabout gave us on Twitter, which is, what do we think Kevin Vimmer's farewell note to Son said? Michael,
you really should have allowed us to research some German before you asked us this question.
That's true. Michael, you feel like someone who's thought long and hard about this.
Das ist nein Stockenblocken.
I feel like those last two words weren't actually German. I feel like you just made those up.
I Michael's too big of a scholar to do that, I think. Ben, do you have any thoughts on what the note said?
From Vimmer to Son or Son to Vimmer?
From Vimmer to Son. He's the one leaving after all.
I mean, they probably both sent each other notes. No, I don't know. I don't speak German.
This bit is... I mean, I guess...
You know, leaving, we really should have prepped for these questions, guys.
That seems like a lot of work.
I feel like...
That seems like a lot of work.
If we provided these questions in advance and told what was going to be asked of us, maybe we could come up with some bits for them.
I feel like you criticizing our preparation on this podcast is kind of all the bit we need at the end of this one. So
yeah.
Even Brian has a bit this year. See how good we're doing, guys.
Yeah, I saw on Twitter... I don't have my old bit anymore.
I saw on Twitter someone posted screenshots of a Spurs TV video where Sonny is asking Kev, you know, why are you my best friend? And Kevin was like, because you're just the sweetest, best, and so cute, and you're just funny all the time, and I love you, and I hope we stay together for many, many years to come at this team. And my heart broke, like, a lot.
Was he wearing jorts while he was answering these questions?
Was he wearing a tuxedo shirt without the rest of the tuxedo outfit?
I think both. He was wearing both jorts and a tuxedo t-shirt.
I mean, it wouldn't be the first time, so...
Yeah, I hope he left with as much class as he played for us with.
I'm just worried, you know, I remember when we had Sandro and Aurelio Gomez, there was the rumor that we were only keeping Gomez on our books because he and Sandro were really good friends, and we wanted to keep Sandro happy. And then
we're only keeping Gomez because he's the best keeper we've ever had.
Okay. Yeah. That's more than enough bits out of you, buddy.
But yeah, we saw what happened to Sandro, obviously, as the years went by without Aurelio Gomez to keep him happy. So I'm just worried about Sonny's future at QPR.
I think we should all be worried about Sonny's future at QPR. And on that depressing note, it's time to wrap this up. Ben Daniels, where can people find you on the internet?
That's our only mailbag question?
We're running really long, so yeah, that's our only mailbag question.
Wow.
Good job, mailbag contributors.
No, guys, we just had long and involved conversations tonight. So, and it's also like past midnight here in America. So,
there was a lot that I had to say to all of your questions. They were very good. All right. Like, you should keep trying, keep plugging away. One day we'll make this work for all of us.
Maybe next week we'll have an all mailbag episode because it's the fucking international break.
Yeah, why wouldn't you put an international break three games into the season?
An all mailbag episode? What are we, guys? The double pivot? Come on. We can generate our own content. We can do this, guys.
Bet, so people can't find you anywhere online, Ben?
Yeah, if you want to find my own generated content, you can find me at Gary Rootbeer on Twitter.
Brian, where can people find you? On the inner tubes.
I am on Twitter at Brian_Ashlock. And follow me, please.
Wait, really?
Yeah,
did you change your Twitter handle?
Yeah, for real.
What a brave new world. I could actually call you by your last name now. Okay.
Yeah, great. So the weird thing is I found out that another person that works at my law firm is actually really active in U.S. men's soccer team blogging.
Ew.
And he actually even listed in his firm bio, like, he's not hiding it, and he tweets from work all the time. So I'm like, oh, I'm safe now. So, you know, if they're gonna fire me, they have to fire him too, so.
It would be well be
good
worse.
Theory. His takes are way worse than all of mine. So
I mean, if he's blogging about the U.S. men's national team, then like,
yeah,
clearly.
I mean, yeah, I'm super into the U.S. men's team, and if I knew any of the players that played for the U.S. men's team, I would be able to tell you specifically why his takes are bad, but they're just bad.
How long have you worked with Brian Mechanic?
I've worked with Mechanic for, God, you know, decades.
I mean, it must be so different now that you're not podcasting with him, and you're on a podcast where people don't mispronounce players' names on a regular basis. That must be.
That was actually going to be the joke I was going to make.
I got it ahead of you for once.
Yeah,
Michael, where can people find you on the internet?
No, so I have been blogging under my real name, Michael Cayley, for many years.
Yes, Freddie, you do.
But,
that is a good point.
Despite that, my internet presence is, if you want to really like get a sense of who I really am, the kind of fashions that I prefer, you can check me out at Brett Rainbow on Tumblr. So that's
on
Brett Rainbow.
Tumblr, be very clear.
Or BrettRainbow.LinkedIn.
No, Tumblr is really where you share your thoughts.
But especially Tumblr.
Definitely Tumblr. And I, of course, am Skipjack. You can find me on Twitter at Skipjack0079. And that is it for this podcast.
And you're Brett Rainbow on Instagram, right?
Yeah, obviously, Brett Rainbow on Instagram. You can find my...
we are all Brett Rainbow.
My curated Instagram account where I take pictures of T-shirts, you know, on different street corners, not being worn by anyone. It's very, very, very good. So you should all check it out. And on that, I think it's time to wrap it up and all get hyped for an international break week. For Ben Daniels, for Brian Ashlock, and for Brett Rainbow, I am Skipjack. Come on, you Spurs.